keep it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Really happy to be back. It's May 10th, 2011. Really interesting time to be alive and knowing what we know. Really strange time. Extremely big news story, as I'm sure everyone is aware of at this point. FBI Director James Comey has been fired by Donald Trump. So this is the talk of the town. He's being compared to Nixon, and man, a lot of crazy, crazy implications here. I don't even know what to make of it, to be honest. So with that being said, let's get the panel started here, because we're going to have a special guest in a few minutes to join us and talk about cryptocurrencies, because, you know, Bitcoin has been surging to all-time highs, $1,700 for one Bitcoin. I remember when I first learned about Bitcoin, they were probably worth like 200, 300 bucks. And now, it's, you know, if I had bought in back then, you know, maybe that would be something different. But it's not too late. It's still growing. And what many people don't even realize is there's an alternative cryptocurrency marketplace, which is absolutely booming and is on fire. In fact, I myself started participating. I bought some what are called Ethereum a while back, and I did really well with it. And so this is something very interesting that I think can be very helpful for young people, to help them save money and invest, and also cut the bankers out. And that's, I guess, maybe the bigger, more important aspect of it that I want to talk about tonight. That'll be talked about in a few minutes. First, let me introduce our awesome journalist that we have on the line tonight, Jake Anderson. What's up, Jake? How are you doing tonight, man?
Not much. Just like everyone else, trying to make sense of what's going on. You know, interestingly, I went to high school with Sarah Huckabee, whatever her last name is. I just know her as Sarah Huckabee.
There's, right?
Yeah. But so it's weird as hell for me to see her up there basically doing a better job than Sean Spicer, who is what, hiding in the bushes or some shit. I mean, we're gonna find out like he needed his diaper changed or something during one of these press conferences or something. But yeah, it's, you know, it's a lot of sound and fury, but we don't really know what it means. I mean, as as kind of reckless and at times dim-witted as this administration has been, and honestly wouldn't surprise me if they just didn't realize how big of a move this was to make and got kind of taken off guard by the blowback from it. But it's really hard to understand how someone wouldn't have foreseen how bad this was going to look, that you're firing the person who's in charge of the investigation. And then, you know, what was that? The weird comments he put in the letter to him, which was, "While I appreciate you informing me three times that I'm not under investigation," like that almost seemed like, I mean, does that not almost seem like a sarcastic, backhanded,
so smug insult? Dude.
But it's like, what does that even mean? Like, what? Why would Trump even play that game? He's the president, and now everyone's so suspicious. Like, I really think he's such a spiteful, vindictive person that he's willing to risk almost anything to get back at someone. And obviously Comey did something behind the scenes that pissed him the hell off. And so I honestly wouldn't be surprised if this is way more of a personal thing than it was a political thing. But, you know, it's got the rabid political dogs all riled up looking for red meat. But, you know, you got to wonder, are they ever going to produce anything? Like, they finally clarified it's not 17 intelligence agencies. There's only three intelligence agencies that were suspicious of the Russian connections. Like, are they ever going to actually disclose what evidence they have that makes us think this is a thing? Because it's like dominating like entire political site. Is this just like a media hoax? I honestly just feel like this is a way for MSNBC to get ratings at this point.
Oh, man. Yeah, dude. So many just goofy things going on. And you know what I found pretty ironic? Several things. But first of all, of course, all of the comparisons of Trump to Nixon, right? Yeah. And, you know, famously, Henry Kissinger was Nixon's advisor. And then Trump is meeting with Henry Kissinger today in the White House.
You can't get more ironic than that. Like, it's just unbelievable.
And then earlier today, I found out that in L.A., there was liberals holding pro-Comey protests.
Right.
So they're protesting in favor of the head of the FBI. Like, I don't know what the hell has happened in this country, but it's like we're in like an alternate reality.
It really feels like that. I didn't think I would ever see a protest in support of the FBI, which is got to be, you know, one of the most corrupt law enforcement agencies in the fucking world.
It's like, what?
They're not on your side, Comey. And the funny thing is, most of the liberals who are crying foul right now have literally been talking nonstop about how this is the same man who cost Hillary Clinton the election.
Exactly. And Hillary Clinton just came out last week, or just, it was just in the last 7 days, I think, where she came out and gave an interview and she gave the reasons why she lost the election. And one of those reasons was because of Comey and the timing of his announcement about the investigation into the, whatever it was, the emails,
yeah.
So now the same people are like, well, Comey and the FBI cost Hillary Clinton the election. This is totally unfair. Are the same people like, I can't believe Donald Trump is firing Comey. And so it's just, God, man, it's hilarious.
It's sad. It's like this state. The government and just the general state of things, it's got people so twisted up and turned around that they don't even know what they're upset about anymore.
Yeah, they know they're upset. They're upset about something. Just really, really strange, strange times. Don't get me wrong, man. Like, Trump is obviously running into some major, major issues of corruption. And I don't doubt that they exist, and maybe that's why he fired Comey, who knows. And I'm glad to see Comey get fired because, you know, he's a longtime insider, part of the deep state, I would say. But again, this is, we got to remember that this is all part of whatever twisted theater these guys are trying to pull off right now. Because the way, I don't know if you noticed, but the media was able to pounce on this Comey thing. So almost it was almost like a premeditated type of thing. Excuse where there was already these really, really long analytical combative essays written up on like The Atlantic and New York Times and Washington Post and all these places about, Nixon and Trump and Comey. It's like, it's too good to be true, man. It's just so strange, so weird. All I'm saying here, I'm not saying any grand conspiracies going on, but this is, appears to be a bunch of theater. So whenever there's theater going on, just pay attention, be vigilant, be wary. I hate to say vigilant, but be wary about what's happening. Because
if you see something, say something.
There you go.
I'm more surprised at him meeting with Kissinger for a photo op than I am firing Comey. Like, that's like the number one. That's like having a parade announcing that you're a globalist warmonger.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw. I saw a clip from C-SPAN where he was just him and Kissinger were just sitting there, and they weren't even saying anything. They were just sitting there.
No.
For like 20 seconds, they sat there, and then Trump finally introduced Kissinger. It was just the weirdest stuff going on.
So weird. Yeah, he got the talking to big time by now, and like, I don't know. It's what's going to be fun is watching all of the Trump people, some of the more intelligent Trump people, slowly come down from their. From their Trump high, because I know exactly what it's like, because I had to come down from my Obama high, and it happened pretty quickly. But it's all downhill from here, people. If you supported Trump, I hate to tell you, it's all downhill. He's not going to get the wall built. He might clean out a few insiders. I mean, he's maybe going to drain the swamp or whatever you want to call it a little bit. But at the end of the day, he's going to keep doing the same damn shit that Obama was doing. And you're going to end up justifying him like so many of my friends justify Obama.
Well, there'll be the people that are like you, Jake, where you realize, okay, shit, Obama wasn't all that I thought he was going to be. And then there's going to be the people who are unlike you, who still think that we ended the Afghan war. And that Obama, like, ended all the wars and brought peace to the world. Like, there's people that believe that.
Well, no, even worse are the people that know that didn't happen, but now are okay with war because Obama was. Well, if someone as intelligent as Obama went in there and said we have to keep these war going, there must be something going on that, I mean, to me, that's even worse. Like, if you genuinely believe that he mitigated the wars, I mean, it's completely... it's completely inaccurate thinking, but if that's the premise you're working off of, that he decreased the wars, and at least then you're still working off of your original principles. But but even worse are the people that now think that war is good.
Yeah, dude, it's just this partisan politics stuff. It really messes up people's brains, I think, and it crosses your wires. And people who would otherwise be rational thinking people allow themselves to get caught up in this like identity political stuff and allow it to cross their brain up, and they don't think right. And I don't know if you saw that video today, but there's that dude down in, it's on some beach, and there was this dude just yelling and screaming at him. This Muslim family, just because
it's so disturbing.
Like, and then he's like beating on his chest, and he's like, "Donald Trump is my president, and America is the greatest country in the world." And it's like, okay, dude, but don't go around intimidating people and pounding on your chest and yelling at people to leave the country because you're so because you think the country is so good. You make it look really bad when you do that. And so it, this stuff is just really like, I don't know, man. Like I've lived through a few elections now, but I've never seen people get so crazy dumb after something like this. And of course I'm talking about both sides of the aisle and from all sorts of different political movements, even the movements that I feel more sympathetic with, like, you know, some of my friend, many of my friends are libertarian and stuff. And I noticed a lot of people also in that movement allowing this partisan stuff to mess up their thinking and stuff like that. So, you know, it sucks. It just sucks seeing it. But, you know, of course, on Monday I let this stuff get to me too much, but now I feel a little bit better. It's, you know, at least you got to get a little laugh out of it. Today I've been laughing all day at all this nonsense about Comey because everybody's going crazy. And it's just, to me, it's at the point now where it's like, okay, this is funny. But that being said, all the political crap aside, I think there's something that is much more effective that, than dealing in politics right now. And that's this stuff that I mentioned at the beginning of the show called cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin, Ethereum, and there's this whole cryptocurrency ecosystem going on that many, many people don't even know about. I think, you know, Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin is in the vocabulary now. Many people still don't know what it is, but there's a whole other side of that economy that basically nobody knows about yet. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. We've got a special guest on the line by the name of Randy Hilarski. Randy's got a company called $200 Social. And he's going to join us right now to talk about some of this crypto stuff. What's up, Randy? How are you doing
today? Hey guys. How's it going from a nice warm Panama?
We're doing pretty well. We're here in the U.S. where we're trapped in this crazy alternate reality, it seems, of political nonsense going on just nonstop.
Hey, you know, guys, I voted with my feet 6 years ago, and I'm an anarchist. And I came down here, and now I get to watch the zoo from outside the cage, and it's really fun. It's entertainment for us down here, and you wouldn't believe the comments that I get when I tell people that I'm an American. They're like, "Oh my God, I feel bad for you." So,
man, it is wild, you know. And I've recently got back. I went to I guess not too recently. I went to Costa Rica for my birthday in December. And man, I liked it a lot down there. It was like a whole different world. And I've been thinking about doing the whole leaving the country thing too. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit after we get through some of this cryptocurrency stuff. So the first thing I want to do is, being that many, many people don't even know what this stuff is all about, Randy, can you just quickly tell us what cryptocurrency is?
Well, cryptocurrency is a free market solution to money. It's peer-to-peer. You want something, I have it, I exchange it with you, and cryptocurrency is no different than barter or any other kind of transfer of goods. So you have something I want. The peer-to-peer community has decided that Bitcoin is worth, today, I just did a transaction for $1,750 each. Depending on what I'm buying from you, I'll give you a portion of a Bitcoin. So that's essentially what cryptocurrency is. It's just something that we decided that has value, and I exchange it with you. It's no different than the days old when the people in the mountains traded seashells because seashells were rare. Bitcoin's the same thing. 21 million will all we'll ever have, and that breaks down into what we call Satoshis. It's the smaller version of the Bitcoin when it's broken down into, I think it's a millionth or something like that, or a thousandth or 10,000th of a one. But check into it yourself. But very interesting world that we're moving into. We don't need the governments anymore. I don't want to go out there and say that the government is bad. You know, I don't want to cause problems in that way. But we can handle money ourselves. Crypto is just the beginning, guys. And I bet you in 10 years, we'll each have our own cryptocurrency.
Interesting. So I guess Bitcoin is just a form of payment that people have placed value in, based on, you know, what they think is, you know, what they think the value is, which is basically any currency, you know, the dollar, gold, silver, and sure, you know, gold and silver have practical uses. But this is where I think cryptocurrency really separates itself in from a technical aspect from cash, is that many of these cryptocurrencies are being used for useful purposes.
Absolutely.
It's like off the top of my head, what comes to mind is smart contracts, which is what the Ethereum platform, I guess, is kind of based around. So, I mean, aside from just being a form of, you know, payment and maybe a store of wealth or an investment, like, aren't some of these cryptocurrencies used for, like, business purposes and for practical purposes?
Oh, absolutely. They're also a great store of value. If you would have bought Bitcoin, I actually started getting big into Bitcoin in 2014. If you got in at that time, the beginning of 2014, we were right around 250. If I would have just bought, you know, 20 grand worth at that time, you know, divide by four, and, you know, I would have had a nice 80 grand or almost 160 grand just since it's risen to almost 800 today. So it's been a very good store of value for your money, beating gold hands down. I'm a gold and silver guy. That's where I really grew up in business. I was in sales, and then I was a blogger, and I wrote for a gold investment company and did videos on YouTube and things like that. And that's how I really got my foot into the business, because a lot of the people in cryptocurrencies are libertarians and anarchists. The people that really got this whole thing going, the Roger Vers of the world, Charlie Schrems, Ira Miller, and a couple of the other big names. So, you know, that's just the store of value aspect is what's been important to me. I love the smart contracts. They're moving along. Ethereum is just one of the companies. There's also Expanse. You could do smart contracts on Dash. And there's a whole bunch of others that have similar features. So, you know, BitShares is another big one. So don't just get narrowed down to the few big ones. There's some really cool projects that are upcoming that will get tons of attention and raise billions of dollars. That's just my feeling for the next couple of years.
Interesting. So you mentioned like the aspect of governments not regulating these currencies. And, you know, our show here on the Anti-Media, we do a lot of geopolitics stuff. We talk about the petrodollar on a regular basis. And so we all know how destructive the petrodollar system, the Federal Reserve, and their policies and the things that they do. Many of the actions that we do around the world, although we claim are for, like, you know, we're going to Iraq to liberate them from Saddam Hussein and stuff like that, we're fed that rhetoric, but the truth is it has more to do with, like, the petrodollar system and, you know, keeping the empire held up and all that kind of stuff. Tell us a little bit about how these currencies are able to, you know, help us right some of these wrongs that are going on with monetary policy in countries around the world, especially, you know, with the United States and the Federal Reserve being probably the biggest, most powerful actor in that whole thing. How do these cryptocurrencies help us, you know, subvert the central banking systems?
Well, I like to be careful, guys, with some of the language that I use, because I do have a lot of influence. But I do believe that we can change the world by using cryptocurrencies, because we're defunding the systems that we don't believe in. We're taking our money out of the system. And that's the easiest way to stop something that we don't believe in. I think I'll keep that one very simple.
I got you. Cool. Yeah, and that's one thing that I find really cool about these currencies is that there's a bunch of them. They all compete against each other, and they all kind of keep each other honest. And of course, some fail, some thrive. But mainly, the cool thing that I like is that, for the most part, these things are like self-regulated by collective decision making and innovators and entrepreneurs. And it's not really a government system that's in control of, you know, the issuing of these coins and stuff. And for that reason, I think a lot of countries have been a little bit hesitant to like adopt this technology or allow it to kind of flourish. Randy, have you noticed that? I mean, I feel like there's news stories all the time, most recently out of China, where they're like putting restrictions on, you know, Bitcoin exchanges and stuff because, you know, they're worried about about it getting out of control.
Yeah, and it's happening. They can't control it. What they can do is they can put up roadblocks that does slow down the system. Japan just recently okayed Bitcoin as a form of payment in the country. That's really, as you look at the exchanges right now, a great deal of the trading volume and the purchasing of Bitcoins coming out of Japan. It did slow down greatly when China told the exchanges that people couldn't withdraw their Bitcoin. So, yeah, governments still play a role. They can slow down the system, but they can't stop it. The only way you could turn off Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies is to turn off the internet. But that would make no sense. Why would we want to go back, you know, 30 years or 20 years and go back to the days of old? We're the cat is out of the bag.
Yeah, and, you know, everything nowadays is run on the internet, so it doesn't really... You know, the internet is something that is like the power grid, is something that may have, you know, blackouts or outages, but is something that, you know, people are going to keep operational, you know. So I know a lot of people hesitate. You know, some people listening may be more into investing in silver and hard assets and stuff like that. What is the difference, do you think, Randy, between hard assets and cryptocurrency investments?
Okay, so this is one perfect for me. I've written many articles on the subject. I'm a silver guy originally. I'm a silver bug. I own stacks of silver. I love it, but it's very hard to transport. My silver is not in Panama, guys. I'm not planning on bringing it here. So it's kind of, now that I'm no longer living in the U.S., it's kind of just sitting there collecting dust. And if anything does, you know, that whole shit hits the fan thing, I have no access to it. So I've actually thought about selling it, putting it into Bitcoin, then buying some more silver down here in Panama just to get it nearby me. What I did a little chart. It showed the comparisons of gold with Bitcoin, and they both have a store of value. You know, there's a seven characteristics of money. And gold still outperforms Bitcoin, but the only reason it does is because Bitcoin doesn't have a long history yet. But once Bitcoin's been around for 15 or 20 years, it'll way outperform gold as far as money is concerned. So I think people should still own precious metals, especially silver, because I think silver has the much larger upside. But they should have a portion of that money in crypto. I'm not an investment advisor, but I tell everybody, you know, own some precious metals, own some Bitcoin. You know, I have no problem with people saying to me, "Oh, Randy, but if they do an EMP over the country, no one's going to be able to get their Bitcoin." I said, "But the great thing is, your Bitcoin never goes away. You know, keep your Bitcoin, put it in cold storage." I don't have time to go into the whole thing about cold storage, but you own your Bitcoin. You put it into a device that's not connected to the internet, or into a paper wallet, which is a code that's printed off, and you put it somewhere safe. And then when you want to access your Bitcoin, you just scan it, boom, it's back online. So that's my answer to anybody who's worried about EMPs.
Yeah, that's one interesting thing. The first little bit of Bitcoin that I ever received was from actually a Bitcoin entrepreneur from around where we're at here in San Diego, by the name of Morgan Rockwell. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but he gave me a paper. It's like the size of a dollar bill, and it's got two barcodes on it, one to send and one to receive. And he gave me like a dollar worth of Bitcoin back years ago, and then a couple months ago, I found it in some of my I was moving some stuff around, and I found it, and it was worth like a lot more than the $1 that he gave me.
Great.
Yeah, and it was still there, and I wound up just taking it off, putting it onto a Bitcoin wallet on my phone, and then, you know, one thing led to another, and that's how we're that's what led us to talking about this right now. But it's you can take it offline, so that's one thing that people have always been worried about. It's like, well, if the internet goes down, well, there goes all my, you know, savings and investments and stuff. Well, not really. You can do cold storage, which is taking it completely offline onto a device that is not connected to the internet, or you could literally print it out on a paper or on anything really.
Just remember, Nick, that the audience needs to know that if you buy Bitcoin and you leave it on an exchange, you don't own your Bitcoin. They have your keys, your private keys. So you need to take it into cold storage if you're really serious. I only keep money Bitcoin on exchange that I'm using to trade, period. That's it. Everything else, as soon as we're done with the trade, it goes off.
Yeah, that's really good advice. You want to always be – you always want to keep your stuff, at least most of it, in a wallet of your own so that you don't lose it. So no one – it makes it a lot harder for someone to hack or hack into a website where it's stored. If you have it in your own wallet, then it's much, much more secure. On that note, I've got my co-host on the line, Jake, and he was asking me before the show, because he doesn't know too much about this stuff, just about – how to get involved. Jake, are you still there?
Yep.
Yeah, what was your question for Randy?
Well, I guess, yeah. I had a similar situation. I had a friend that was going to sell me some Bitcoin like 3 years ago, and he like very enigmatically just kind of like disappeared like right after he said he was going to, and I couldn't get in touch with him. So I could have ended up with a slip of paper worth a lot more than it would be, but I guess for people that are interested in getting involved, like what's the easiest way to, I know there's a sequence of, you need to get your code, you need to get on the exchange, and you need cold storage, but what's the first step? I mean, is it a private club, and you need to find someone who can bring you into the club?
No, not at all. Anybody can sign up and get an account. There's many, many exchanges and many online wallets. Just remember that, yes, your online wallet is your entry into the system, but I don't recommend you keep your Bitcoin there. You take it off and put it into cold storage. But to get started, I would recommend an easy access point is coinapult.com, coinapult.com. They're actually located here in Panama. One of my good friends, Ira Miller, is the founder. And our friend Gabe is the CEO, and they do a great job. All you need is an email to set up an account on Coinapult. So they do a really easy wallet. It's not complicated. Just the other day, I gave away a bunch of Bitcoin on my Facebook page, and I told people, hey, just sign up on a Coinapult account and give me your 35-digit address, and I'll send you $10 of Bitcoin. And it worked out really good, and it was hugely successful. And the guys didn't even know I was doing it. So I told them, hey, look, guys, I did a bunch of marketing for you for free. So it worked out really well. There's many wallets out there. I don't recommend people use Coinbase. I know Coinbase is the biggest one in the U.S., but I'm kind of paranoid. I'm still a tinfoil hat guy. So any company that has a former executive of Facebook on their board of directors kind of makes me nervous. So
what makes you concerned?
I'm a tinfoil hat guy, man. Sorry. Well, we won't go too far into it, but you guys can read into it.
right. Well, one question I had that's always confused me, and that's how it maxes out at 21 million. I guess I don't understand. Maybe math is not my forte, but if it's going to keep growing, how can there be a finite number associated with its peak?
Okay, so every time a Bitcoin block is mined, it takes every 10 minutes this happens. The miner that wins, who actually their system figures out the algorithm, that's a math algorithm, they're awarded with one block of Bitcoin. Currently, each block of Bitcoin is worth 12.5 Bitcoins. So in 2 years' time, I believe, that will half, and that will go down to 6.25 Bitcoins. And then a certain amount of blocks later on, that drops down to 6.25 is. And it just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And I think it's 50 or 70 years from now, or I don't know the exact number, then Bitcoin actually stops mining. So we do reach maximum amount of mining, and that's when it reaches 21 million. Unlike gold, which, you know, you can continue mining, you can continue to find it in the ground, Bitcoin's even more finite than gold is.
Interesting.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, and of course, as with gold, you know, it's the same way. Eventually, you run out of gold to mine, you know.
Absolutely. Or go to other planets.
Yeah, and then you start mining asteroids and stuff, and those are like the alternative currencies. But, you know, here's the thing, though. Once you get to that 21 million point, then Jake, I think part of what you were trying to ask is, you know, what happens next? Well, then I think Bitcoin enters a period of even higher deflation, which means that the value of Bitcoin, if people are still wanting to put money into that system and use it, and once it reaches 21 million, well, then the value of the Bitcoins are just going to start going up through the roof as well, you know, and so.
Well, we'll have to reach, there'll be some issues, but that's, you know, we'll probably long be dead by the time Bitcoin finishes mining,
ooh, or at least,
you know, you know, so.
One of the interesting things is that, most of these cryptocurrencies are like the exact opposite of cash. Whereas, you know, cash, I just read this week that central banks around the world are still injecting record amounts of stimulus, not in the U.S. per se, but in Europe and in Japan and in China. Central banks are injecting huge amounts of cash. It was in the trillions. I think it was like $2 trillion. Just so far this year. So the thing with cryptocurrencies is that it isn't like that. There's only a finite amount of currency that can be mined. So when all of that currency is existing, they can't just start creating new currency out of thin air. And so in that sense, I guess that problem, like the whole fiat currency thing, has been the main problem that has plagued financial markets for a very long time. And that's why all these many countries have dealt with inflation crisis and you know, their currencies collapse and all kinds of things like that. Or like in the case of the United States, where we have to go around knocking over governments around the world to keep our currency, the primary one. These are a little different. They're not where someone can just say, oh, we're going to just create. And it's not like there's this secretive organization like the Federal Reserve that just creates coins out of thin air. These things, most of them anyway, are very transparent. Like a lot of this stuff, most of this blockchain technology, and I think that's one of the things that makes it so awesome, is that it's all completely open source and transparent. You can see it happening. In fact, whenever you make a transaction, you can like, can't you like go over to the blockchain and actually see it happen? Randy, is that true?
Blockchain, yeah, blockchain.info. There's a couple other, I can't remember the actual website, but I use it all the time to make sure my transactions are going through.
Yeah, and so like you can kind of see what's going on, and it's transparent, it's not secretive. And so there's a bunch of different reasons why these currencies are taking off. So
there's so many cool ones coming out too.
Yeah, with that said, Randy, that's what I was actually going to ask you next is, what do you have your eye on right now in the crypto world? Because there's all kinds of different projects. I recently learned about a coin called Trust, WeTrust, where they're doing like micro lending and like peer-to-peer lending, where they're completely cutting out like those payday lenders, which are like super parasitic, and they're cutting out banks with some of these peer-to-peer banking, apps and currencies. I mean, what do you have your eye on right now?
I've got so many. My friend Ira Miller just he built his own blockchain that he's about to launch to the public soon. It's gold, the gold coin spelled G-U-L-D. Follow Ira. Absolutely amazing. The guy's a freaking genius. We're going to have our own browser, the gold browser, where there is no corporation harvesting your information. That's coming. And then we're launching our own social network. This will be the first time I'm actually talking about this. So we're launching our own social network that will be built on the gold browser, and it'll be peer-to-peer. So if you don't want your information public, it won't be. If you want to send Jake an image, you send Jake can access your computer, your file, see the image. and it never actually goes onto the web. So very cool stuff coming out. That's just one of them. I'm actually the social media manager for Steemit. I don't know if you guys seen too much about what's going on with Steemit, but I absolutely love the platform. It's a social media platform that pays you to post. They don't actually pay you. You get voted on by your peers, and your peers upvote you, which earns you money. Just in the last 10 months, I think I've made about 50 grand on the website. So for all your people out there who use websites, who are content creators, who use websites like Patreon or ask for donations, use something like Steemit, and you don't have to do that anymore. I think I made just today alone almost $400 off of Steemit. So you could really do very well if you're a content creator. You guys got your podcast here. You take your podcast, throw a nice image with it, put a little text, put it up on Steemit.com. It's on the blockchain. It's there forever. There's no censorship. And you get to talk about what you want. It's very attractive for the libertarian and anarchist community because, you know, a lot of websites are against a lot of the stuff that we write. And we feel very comfortable using Steemit to be our platform to speak.
That's pretty awesome.
Jeez, Rick, we need to get on that thing, man.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah. Hey, you guys got me. You know, I'm the social media manager on the website, so you can always ask me questions. I'm usually in the top 10 to 15 writers as far as payouts. But if you guys follow my lead, you know, social media is what we do with 200 Social. We help companies. We have a bunch of crypto companies that we do their social media for them. I don't know if you guys know Jeff Berwick. I'm sure you do. Jeff Berwick's one of our clients, Dollar Vigilante. And, you know, just get on there and take your podcast and put it on there every day, and you will grow. And just support other people, engage, and share it across social media, and you will get rewards. It's just how it works. Right now, Steem just passed almost a dollar. It was $1.30 the other day. It dropped back down to about 84 cents each Steem, but it sat at about 10 cents for a long time. So a lot of interest is coming back to the Steemit platform because the price has gone up. And my wife and I, we suffered through the 6 month period when our payouts per articles were between $5 and $20. And now all of a sudden our payouts are easily over $150 per article. So just gotta stick with it.
Yeah, man, there's a exponential growth in the cryptocurrency community. If you look at the amount of money coming in, at one point last week, there was like $1 billion coming in a day.
Yeah, still is.
Yeah, and so there's a huge growth. But I mean, this market, I see many people talking about, you know, it being a bubble or wondering if it's a bubble. What do you think about that? I mean, is this a bubble or is this still something? Because the way I see it, it seems like it's still something that's undiscovered that is got plenty of growth to go still.
Yeah, whenever someone tells me it's a bubble, I kind of laugh. I mean, we're only, we're right around $40 billion market cap. That's nothing. That's a small company. So, you know, we're a medium-sized corporation, whatever you want to call it, but you know, we're a long ways to go. And this is a global phenomenon, guys. Japan just announced that Bitcoin is a legal currency in their country. Australia just announced that this coming summer or in the next couple of months, it's going to be a legal currency in their country. It was in the news today. So the countries around the world are waking up and they're allowing Bitcoin. I shouldn't say they're allowing. They're tolerating Bitcoin because they know they can't stop it. So start allowing your citizens to use it and everything will work out fine. I just saw something today that New York State, I'm from New York, so when I see New York State news about Bitcoin, I always pay attention. People in New York have a hard time using crypto because it's the strictest state in the whole country as far as crypto is concerned. And Coinbase just announced that people who live in New York can get their Bitcoin debit card, finally. I mean, the rest of the country's been able to have it forever, but you know, New York State citizens couldn't get it. So I thought that was a win for the Bitcoin community. So, you know, things that I could do down here, you guys can't do. And I think it's gonna start changing. We got Bitcoin ATMs all over. I'm in Panama, and I bet we have 1,000 in this country. So I can access Bitcoin everywhere.
Nice. That's awesome, dude. You know, I've gotten a few of my friends into it. I've in the last few months, I've been, you know, doing a little more moving my, instead of using cash or my bank, I've been putting my money in Bitcoin instead. And I've gotten several of my friends involved, and they're all extremely happy with the alternative currency marketplace and stuff. Randy, I mean, a lot of people listening to us tonight aren't really, they're not really investors. They've probably not invested too much in the past. What would be a simple, some simple advice you can give to people? And again, we're not telling anyone like how to invest their money, but just some basic tips here that people who maybe aren't very experienced in this can use to get started and, you know, maybe see a nice, possibly a nice investment.
Well, I would say we call Steemit the gateway crypto. And Steem is the gateway crypto. It's because you do not need to buy anything on Steemit. You just log in, you set up your account, and you start writing on it. Don't put shit out there, guys. You know, take the moment, put a nice image, you know, put some nice text. Don't, you know, if you want to just do memes, that's cool too. You know, it works. You might not make as much money, but spend a little bit of time writing, and you will get Steem, which you can change for Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency. So that's the gateway to crypto. And you know, the great thing is that we used to call just recently. You know, we go to a lot of crypto events, and it's always a sausage fest. You know, it's all dudes, right? Because of, you know, developers and tech and that kind of stuff. But Steemit is actually almost 50% women, so it's really changing the crypto atmosphere because so many women are coming on board and grabbing a hold of this. And, you know, women are the ones who teach the world. It's just how going back ancient times, women are always the ones who are helping the next generation. And if we can get them on board teaching their kids or their family members and, you know, their friends, that's an amazing thing. So I recommend everyone get on Steemit. Just be part of the solution, right? Don't just don't come there for making the money, but you're gonna meet some great people. Follow me, watch what I do. I wrote so many articles on social media and how to get your foot in the door at Steemit to start getting some nice money on the platform. And if you follow my lead, I promise you'll be doing well in the next month. Maybe not a ton of money, but hey, if you're making $10, $15, $20 per post, that's extra income that you don't have to take out of your weekly salary to go buy Bitcoin. And this will be your Bitcoin. Just don't spend it. Just keep stacking it, man. Like we stack silver. I used to tell people take 10% of their money and every paycheck and go buy a silver bar or a silver coin and just keep stacking it. Well, on Steemit, you could write once, twice, five times a week and maybe earn $50, $60. You sell it for Bitcoin. All of a sudden, Bitcoin goes to $3,000-$4,000. Now that work that you did is worth double for the time that you put in. And a year later, when you're writing on Steemit, those articles you'll be writing, maybe you're going to make $100, $150 like I am. And you know, then you're really banking. Then you could actually think about quitting your job. So this world is a rabbit hole that I suggest you go down and just have fun with it and really connect with the community, because you know, there is no reason for silver and gold people to dislike crypto people. We're kind of born from the same cloth. You know, we all came from the same idea that we want to control our own money. And I think that's why there's a good parallel between the two. We just got to, you know, shake hands. Just say, hey, let's work together on this.
Hey, and, one day over, man. I'm going to join up. I'm going to join on Steemit, man. I'll see you on there.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm just at Hilarski. That's my handle. My wife is at Anna Hilarski and she writes in Spanish.
Now I must warn you, all of my posts are basically just gore. like violent, horrible. I'm just kidding.
There's people, hey, that, listen, there's folks on there, you know, there's one guy named Alien Butt, you know, that's his handle, Alien Butt. He just writes fiction. It's great stuff, man. It's just fiction and he has fun with it. You know, there's some guys that just do memes. So it's really up to you and your podcast. You know, you load your podcast to SoundCloud, and SoundCloud is embeddable into Steemit. So, you know, that's a form of content. And like I said, I recommend you throw an image up there too, along with the SoundCloud image.
So how is it monetizing exactly? How is the content monetized?
Okay. I think remember we talked about Bitcoin and how it mines using an algorithm mathematically, and every 10 minutes new Bitcoin is mined. Well, Steemit is every 3 seconds it's mined. So whenever a new Steem is mined, when people upvote on the platform, they are telling the system that this content is quality, and those newly minted Steem are then applied to the account. You don't get your payout for 7 days, but you'll see your numbers go up. Every time someone upvotes you, you might get a half a penny, a tenth of a penny, $3, depending on how much authority someone has on the website. That's all it is. It's just, I know people think I just call it magic internet money. It really is. You know, just magic internet money. It's a great genius system. The people who own Steem are the ones who give it value. Your Steem power is consider it your shares in the company. So when you get your payout of $150, 80% of that, it's either 75 or 80% of that is yours. The other percentage goes to the people that upvoted you and the people that made comments. The other 75% goes to you. Half of that goes to your Steem power, which is your shares in the company. And then the other half is immediately paid out. And that you could send to an exchange and sell it at that exact moment. But your Steem power, it takes 13 weeks to power down. So you can't take it out immediately. So, for example, I'm powering down right now. I started powering down, I think 4 weeks ago. And I get a set number of Steem every week. It doesn't hurt my account. The only thing it hurts is my ability to upvote. I don't make as much money when there's the part of Steemit called curation, where if you vote on something when it's 10 cents and then it ends up going $100, they reward you for pushing that content, saying that content was good. So that's where that, remember I told you 25% goes to the curator and the people who comment, where that's where that money comes from. So there's a lot of complications that you got to learn. You have to go down the rabbit hole and learn about Steemit. But the big one is just being a content creator. People can actually make money by coming on Steemit and all they do is vote for people's content. You'll need to come in and invest money on the platform in order to do it that way. But there's people that have brought, you know, $500,000 worth of Steem onto the platform, and they're making $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a week just upvoting content. So there's different ways of doing it. I'm a content creator because, you know, my wife and I were not super wealthy. So, but we know how to write. I know how to make memes. She knows how to make images. It works great. So you guys got a podcast. Podcast is worth money. You know, what we can use on Steemit, I mean, there's people writing about recipes. There's comedians. There's people writing fiction. It's whatever you want. You can actually use other people's content too. I use Jeff Berwick's the Anarchast episode sometimes. I'll embed them into a post and I'll talk about them. So it's really up to you what you want to post. And you don't have to put tons of thought into it, really, guys. You know, some of my posts, they take me 5 minutes to write. Some take me an hour. It's depending how what I feel for that day and how much effort I want to put into it.
Interesting. Once again, we have Randy Hilarski on the line with us here on the Anti-Media Radio, talking about cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin. Litecoin is just implemented what was called the SegWit, which is to make it go faster, I guess. You know, there's a huge debate going on in in the whole Bitcoin community right now, just about the future of Bitcoin and the technical decision-making things that are happening. And so some of these smaller currencies are acting as like a little, I would say, like a beta testing, right, for Bitcoin, where mm-hmm. they're testing out some of these features, like on Litecoin. They just implemented SegWit, I think it was this morning, right? Which would make the platform faster. Randy, tell us a little bit about this raging debate going on in Bitcoin, because it's making a lot of news and we'll have questions about it.
It's so funny, Nick and Jake. I actually am I'm a Switzerland or a Panama in this debate. I just sit back and let the smarter people fight it out. Nick Falkvinga, I don't know if you know who he is. He's a businessman from over in Europe, I think Norway or Sweden or something like that. Nick believes that SegWit is a way for R3 or a group that wants to speed up Bitcoin. It's a way for them to put a patent into the system so they can kind of control it. And Roger Ver, who is the other side, who believes that they just want to increase the block size, he doesn't want that to happen. So there's two sides to it. You know, I was a SegWit guy for a while until Rick Falkvinga came out with this article about a week and a half ago, and it kind of shed a different light for me. I didn't know that there was a patent attached to SegWit. And anytime there's anything that, you know, a government can mess up, I don't want it. So it kind of changed my mind right away. So I hope it doesn't happen now. You know, Bitcoin, if we use it as a store of value, it works fine. When we use it like Roger Ver wants to use it as a currency, then it's got its hangups. It's not quite fast enough to be a worldwide currency unless they really increase the block size. So I'm not going to go too much into this debate because I'm not a developer. I'm a marketer, but you know, I sit back and I let these guys fight it out. And I find it so comical, but how no one could seem to shake hands across the table and decide on something to do. You know, Litecoin, they went forward and said, you know what, we're going to do it. I mean, they had their battle too, but they finally got the Chinese miners to commit to it. You should have seen their Twitter battle. It was outright gangster, man. Guys are going at it. They finally got it going, and we'll see how it works out for Litecoin. I don't know about you guys, but I would rather have something like Litecoin, which isn't as important to test something before it goes mainstream, something that is super important. So this might work out for all of us. And by the way, Litecoin wasn't the first one. There's, I think, Grostlecoin, Digibyte, Syscoin, Vertcoin, and one more. They all are in the process of either activating it or they have activated it. So I've been a very big supporter of Digibyte, and I like their project.
Nice. And so some of these smaller currencies are acting as a beta testing for these features. And the other thing too is, the way I see it is like Bitcoin is like your savings account, and then your debit card is like one of these smaller, faster moving currencies. You know, there's some of these alternative currencies promise to be nearly instantaneous and completely anonymous. You know, and that's another feature that we really haven't talked about yet. And we're running out of time to talk about it. But do your research into some of these things. If anonymity is your thing, there are options such as a coin called Monero and other options. You know, these currencies are also used on the dark web and in other places. You could use them as like cash and don't leave a footprint or a paper trail. There's ways to do things like that. Thank you all for tuning in. Randy, thanks for joining us. We look forward to hopefully having you back sometime soon.
Sure.
And, everybody check him out. Randy Hilarski, follow him on Facebook. I'ma let him know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.